Brian Noonan, who's playing on the radio, baby.
This is what you call hubris. Not arrogance, hubris. It's beyond that. Power people who just are so arrogant, they just don't care. They disdain accepted methods of doing things. They assume we're all stupid, including you. I mean, the press. They just assume that. That's hubris. That's unweaning arrogance. That's arrogance gone wild. Insane.
I'm better looking. I have better hair. I'm deceivingly smart. And I want everyone else to do what I say.
You know, I have found in my travels that all the best things in life happen after 2 a.m. Because after 2 a.m. is when things get, audience, say it with me, legendary.
Watching the Hawks at a bar, at a sport bar.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight.
Well, good morning and welcome. Glad you're with me. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick D on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced on the seventh floor in the Skybox studio here on Michigan Avenue. Oh, it's a beautiful night in Chicago, isn't it? Finally, fall is back. Pull out the heavy coats. Beautiful, beautiful. Glad you're here. We have, oh man, do we have a show tonight? We are going to talk a little bit about space with our good friend Rod Pyle. I've had the pleasure when I've been in for Nick before talking to Rod, and every time I think to myself, I don't really care about space. Then I start reading these articles about what's happening in space, and I think, man, I can't wait to talk to Rod and figure out what's going on with Mars and with fires in space and space brain and everything else. And there's a really good conspiracy theory going on having to do with space travel. So a lot to get to with Rod in a little bit. And then we're going to talk a little fall TV. Why not after 3 o'clock? Because as you know, I don't have many vices. TV is my really my one vice. Because it's a vice that my wife does not get mad at me about. It's not socially unacceptable to watch TV. I can do it at home under the supervision of my wife, daughter, and dog. So everything is wonderful. So that's my one big vice. We're going to talk a little bit about fall TV with you, the big premieres, what's good, what's not, and the most popular TV show in every state. I'm not going to go through every state. That would be cumbersome and tedious. But if I'm looking to kill some time, maybe I do 35, 40 states. I don't do them all. That would be excessive. Do most of them. That would be a tease, because it would leave you wanting more if you live in, say, Oklahoma or Nebraska, where I don't even think they have TV. I think they just watch football all the time, which is fine. So we'll do that. Talk, should you drink with your kids when they're young? We'll get into that and a whole lot more. So we're glad you're here. How can you get involved in the program? Oh, it's so easy. It's almost elementary. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. That's also the text number. If you call in, you'll be talking to Dan Shagru. He has no patience for rudeness. So be nice to him. That's how you get to me. That's how it goes. Am I correct in that, Dan? You have no patience for rudeness.
I have a disdain for it.
Of course, yes. You do. A disdain. Your etiquette game is strong.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Strong as your hat game?
Nothing is as strong as my hat game.
That's
true. Let's not get crazy. I was actually working on the hat game today again. All right, we're not getting back into the hat game. But I will say I am very excited to unveil the new chapeau when we go to Spain. I can't wait to send you a – and the first picture, I might take a picture from the airport and send it just to you.
Oh, I like it.
Just of a hat. And you'll go, oh, I know who this is from. Because I'll be using my burner. Because whenever I travel abroad, I use a burner phone.
Good idea.
So I can't be tracked by the man.
Right. You learn that from Blue Bloods?
I learn it from every – oh, Blue Blood, sure. Blue Blood, my wife and I joke, because we've been watching Blue Blood since it premiered, and every week it's the same thing. Somebody's in a jackpot. It's usually Danny. He's always got a problem.
Always jammed up.
He's always jammed up. He's always jammed up. So we do watch Blue Bloods all the time. But I didn't learn about the burner from The Wire.
Oh, I've been using the streets.
No, but, yeah. The streets. I've been using burners since 86, before they even had burners. Back when a burner was, you would actually use a payphone and then rip it off the post and throw it away so nobody else could use it. That's the kind of burners I grew up with. Rotary burners. Took forever to make a call on them. And then just then they were hardwired into the house. It became very tedious to transact crime via telephone back in the day. Now it's so much. Kids these days don't know how easy they have it to commit crimes via telephone. I don't know. I don't know what to do about that other than just move on. So we're good. Now look at that. Laura Vaughn's here with us tonight. This is a new development.
Good Esmeralda, morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just dandy.
Awesome.
I'm all caffeinated. I'm ready to have another fun morning here on the Nick D Show. And I can't believe it's already Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, the week is flying by. Haven't seen you in a while. You been all right?
I'm vertical.
Wow. All right. that doesn't sound promising, but we'll take it for what it is. I guess that beats the... Beats the alternative.
Sure.
And there's Vic sporting that beard that I admire.
It's
always
still growing.
No, and I know you think I'm busting you or being...
You're calling him a dirty hippie.
No,
I know you are.
No, listen. If I were to call him a dirty hippie, he'd know it. Because I would not mince words. I would come straight out and call him a dirty hippie. I've always been...
How did this get started? Dirty hippie.
You're not a dirty hippie. And you're not a hipster wannabe. You're a grown man with a responsible job and a thick, luxurious beard. And I'm envious of it. I'm not going to lie to you. I've become, as my years progress and my hairline recedes, I've become more and more envious of hair on people's heads and then a beautiful beard. Because I could never grow a good, like, speaking of blue bloods, a good Tom Selleck mustache or a big, thick beard like yours. And your beard seems to all be mostly one color. A few changes here and there,
right.
But it looks like my beard when I would grow a beard is like Joseph's Technicolor dream coat. There's gray and red and brown and black, and there's some white in there, and then it looks like you've taken your thumb and your index finger and pinched my chin. There's two big white spots. It's the most horrific menagerie of colors known to facial hair. It's just horrifying. So I see a beard like Vic's, even through the television screen here, and I think to myself, now that is a man who can really grow a beard.
That's a fine-looking beard. It really is.
It's a wonderful
You know,
beard.
I'm with you on the envious of the hair on the top of the head, though. Mine looks like it's sliding off the back of my head now.
See? So. And I used to
that's
be...
That's a fine hat.
Well, sure.
You know.
Cubs. Laura jumping on the bandwagon. You're a Cubs fan all the time, or is this a new thing?
No, I'm just on the bandwagon.
All right. See? I'll tell you this. When the Sox were in it, I welcomed people to the bandwagon. I think some Cub fans are a little more standoffish. We mentioned
really?
This last night. Yeah, they don't want you jumping on the bandwagon. You know? Because, well, they put in over 100 years of suffering. So they don't want you joining in the celebration.
Stay out of our party. You're not invited because you didn't cheer them on for 100 years?
Listen, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's just how some people think.
Okay.
And I agree, you know. I'm not going to crash your party. I'll watch it from the outside with my nose pressed up against the glass. Snot running down the window. That'll be horrifying as I weep. Hockey's back, which is very exciting. Let's all say a hallelujah because hockey season started again last night. However, did not say, inauspicious start, let's say, for the Blackhawks. But because hockey season is back, so is Blackhawks Express. So we'll have that before 5 o'clock, too, which is very exciting. If you didn't get to listen to the game, you got to hear all the games right here on 720 WGN because there is nobody better in the business than John and Troy at calling a game. And then Judd does a yeoman's job, a fantastic job, doing the intermissions and the pre and post. So it is fun. You got to talk to Doc Emmerich last night, which was cool. And not good. Here's how I look at it. The final score was 5-2. In my mind, it was only 3-2. Because those last two empty netters in the final minute and a half, I don't really count those.
They were gratuitous.
Exactly. At some point, you go, all right, oh, wow, you could shoot into an empty net. Wow, aren't you cool? You're so talented, St. Louis Blues.
Very impressive.
Yeah, wow, look at. But then I guess the last one, the Hawks put it in themselves. So that's not good. That's probably not. But it's the first game. Somebody asked Corey Crawford in the post-game interview, and I don't know what reporter it was, but I think his credentials should be taken away. It was, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically, at this point in the season, are you worried about how... This point in the season? The season's 3 hours old. What are you talking about? Well, at this point, and Corey actually, he was stunned. He's like, well, it's a little early in the season. I wished he, and I know he can't because, you know, he's respectful of the press and the Blackhawks do a great job of, you know, talking and being welcoming into the locker room. But at some point, you just got to shake some of these sports monkeys and go, hey, dude, this is our first game.
Moron.
We played with six rookies tonight. We did okay. Yes, we lost the game, but it's not a pattern. They were intimating that this was some sort of pattern amongst the team that we needed to start worrying about 3 hours into 3 hours into the season. Panic has set in Chicago because the Blackhawks lost one game. Vic, I know you're going to lead with that in the news because it's
falling apart. Civic, wheels are coming off.
Yes, civic panic. The wheels are off the wagon. Everything is careening toward disaster after one loss. I don't know what they expected, but thank goodness there are sports reporters in this town asking the probing questions. Speaking of probing questions, space is good for probes, and we will talk to Rod Pyle all about space on the other side at 720 WGN. It may be the final frontier, but we are doing as much as we can to get back into space, stay in space. You know, we have rovers up on Mars now. There's the space station. A lot of things are happening in the sky, and if you're ignoring it, you're doing so to your peril. Thankfully, one man is not. He is on top of all things space. Rod Pyle is an award-winning author and producer. His latest books are Mars, Making Contact, and Blueprint for a Battlestar, Serious Scientific Explanations Behind Sci-Fi's Greatest Inventions. I've had the pleasure of talking to Rod before, and he joins us again this morning on WGN. Rod, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fantastic. I hear your beard is in full bloom.
Well, it's as good as it gets. I need to put a little dye on it every now and then because, like yours, it's not all the same color, and that bothers me.
Yeah, see, and that it bothered me a little bit, too. I like a more homogeneous coloring to my facial hair.
Okay, what do you use?
I don't use anything now. Now I use a razor.
Oh, okay.
I shaved it. I've tried every sort of facial hair known to man, from the full beard to the goatee to the Fu Manchu, and none of them actually did what I hoped. So now I just, I keep it nice and clean. All right. First of all, let's talk about this new book, because it's almost like you are giving people instructions on how we can build a Battlestar. Is that correct? So Blueprint for a Battlestar. If I wanted to build one of these in the yard, can I do it?
It would tell you absolutely nothing about that.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's really a survey of all our favorite tech out of sci-fi. Uh-huh. And it really focused, although the title has Battlestar in it, one chapter does focus on what it would take to build a Death Star, which turns out to be really, really hard. And there was a group, you may remember, that actually petitioned the U.S. government back in 2012 saying, hey, we've got 25,000 signatures. I think it was petition.org. We had 25,000 signatures, and we really think you guys ought to build a Death Star, to which the government responded, we're not in the business of blowing up planets, and it's harder than you think. As it turns out, it is really hard. So that you can learn.
So it would be really hard, but is it possible?
Well, I think it would take the total output of Earth's steel, if you're going to build it from steel, which, they use nicotronium or something in the movie. But if you're going to use a real metal that we know, it would take 800,000 years worth of Earth steel output to do it. Many, many gazillions of dollars with a little exponential number up to the right of money. And just the energy to blow up Alderaan would take 12 trillion years to generate. We've only been around for 12 billion. So, excuse me, 3 trillion years. So it's a big challenge, but, if you want it bad enough, you can probably make it happen.
So what did you find as you were researching the book? I mean, we know a lot of our modern conveniences have come from NASA and research that they've done for the space program. What other things have come from sci-fi that you went, oh, well, this, this was somebody's imagination years ago when it was in a book or movie, and now it's become reality?
Well, there's all that work. You remember Nikola Tesla?
Yes.
He's the crazy scientist that came up with all these great ideas for force fields and particle beams and all this stuff. He also invented alternating current, which after a kind of a nasty fight with Edison won out over direct current, thank God, or we'd all be glued to our first toaster mistake to this day. And, he came up with stuff that has had – it's been – sparse in terms of its practical applications for some of the more way out stuff, although there are people still studying it. But a lot of the things we do use, like everyday electricity, came from his extremely fertile brain. And this guy used to not only come up with invention ideas, but he'd prototype these complex engineering projects in his mind and then just sketch it out. And it was done and it worked. So he had that kind of brain that we can all just kind of sit back and scratch our heads and go, how does he think like that? And another guy that thinks like that, who I did interview for another book recently, is Buzz Aldrin. This guy, and he's 87 now, I think, so he's not young, but he's been promoting space exploration ever since he got back to Earth. He's one of the few guys from that group of astronauts that never stopped. And he is every week in a new place giving talks, doing lectures, engaging with university students for new projects that he's trying to come up with and really pushing this Mars agenda. And it's like there's five brilliant minds all running around in there at once vying for your attention. But he's just a remarkable guy. So that was a thrill.
Now, you mentioned Mars. And Mars, everybody's always been fascinated with Mars. And I think last time I spoke to you was right after the probe had gotten there. The president comes out the other day, and President Obama has been pushing for more space exploration since he got into office. And he came out the other day and he said, basically, listen, I want to get people up to Mars by the 2030s. Again, what's the fascination with Mars for us? And he talked about a partnership between private companies and the government. Is that really going to be the only way, based on funding and everything else, that the U.S. is going to make it to manned travel to Mars?
Excellent question. It doesn't have to be that way, but it probably makes the most sense if it's that way. And I would add the international component. So we've proved with the International Space Station that countries can work together to accomplish these things. It's complicated. It's challenging. But they made it work. We could probably do it again. That said, you know, Obama has been pushing since he got into office. One of his first acts was to cancel the Constellation Return to the Moon mission, which Bush had set up. And it wasn't a bad idea, but it wasn't being executed well. It wasn't funded sufficiently. It wasn't really going along at the rate that they wanted it to, and it was going to go way over budget. So they said, look, let's stop that, and we'll try this new public-private partnership. But in the mix, Orion got saved, which is the new capsule. It's kind of this oversized Apollo capsule, but much more advanced for deep space exploration. And the Super Booster, the Space Launch System, the SLS, also kind of got cobbled together out of what was left over from Constellation. That's not a direct comparison, but the idea is the same. And you've got, you know, congressional districts that contain the places that build all these things. So that continued going along. And the struggle has been that Obama will pass along a budget for NASA after NASA works up their numbers. And then Congress looks at it and goes, well, okay, we want to change this and we want to change that. And then it goes through the House and so forth. And by the time they're done, it comes back sometimes with even more money, but with all these stipulations on how it should be spent. So, yeah, we'll agree on the NASA Mars idea, but we want to do it with this big rocket and this capsule that we're building. We want to put more money over there and take money away from what we're giving to the private companies to develop. And the private companies, which is primarily SpaceX and Boeing, are developing their own spacecraft, their own capsules, and in SpaceX's case, rockets, to take us to the space station so we don't have to keep paying the Russians $83 million per seat, not for the whole ride, but just for one seat in the space capsule to get up there and get back. Yeah,
talk about surge pricing.
Oh, my God. Well, it started at, I think, $52 million, and so it's been going up every year. And the problem is they've got to reserve these seats a couple years out. So while we're waiting to see how soon, you know, SpaceX has got to go over this rocket problem they had with that explosion a few weeks ago, and the other guys are behind schedule. So while we're waiting to see when exactly they're going to fly, it was going to be 2017. Now it looks like 2018 for both of them. We got to figure out how many more $83 million packages we're going to buy from the Russians. So it's challenging. So I think in the end, it'll be a mix of all three entities, NASA, private, and international. But I will add that I had a chance to talk to the guy at NASA. He's number three or number four in the hierarchy, and he's in charge of manned space flight, or human space flight, as it's now referred to. And the plan he laid out over the course of about 40 minutes was this slow, incremental, carefully designed, flexible approach for NASA to basically go it alone using the conventional contractor approach.
Rod, I'm sorry to interrupt. Let's hold on to that. We got to take a quick break for news, and then we'll go into, because I have a lot of questions about Mars and travel and some of the, you know, things that aren't quite working that they're working on. So we'll revisit the slow rollout from NASA. Rod Pyle is my guest. Pylebooks.com is his website where you can read up on all of the Mars making contact and blueprint for a Battlestar Sirius scientific explanations behind sci-fi's greatest inventions. We will talk more about space on the other side. It's 720 WGN. It's Brian Noonan on 720 WGN in for Nick DiGilio. Nick's on vacation for the rest of the week. I am happy to be here, and I am always excited to talk to our guest, Rod Pyle. He is a space expert, an award-winning author and producer. You can go to pylebooks.com to find out about Mars making contact and his newest book, Blueprint for Battlestar Sirius Scientific Explanations Behind Sci-Fi's Greatest Inventions. You had a book signing tonight. At the beginning, you said things went well, Rod?
Yes, they did. I got a good number of people, about 30, I think, and they have lots of questions afterwards, which is always fun as long as I can answer.
There you go. Well, let's go back to what you were talking about right before the news, that we had been talking about the partnership between other nations, the NASA, and private companies to try to get this, what'd you call it, human space travel? Not manned space travel anymore. What'd you call it?
Human space flight.
Human space flight. So we're going to get humans up to Mars. And you started saying that NASA, you would talk to someone in NASA and they were laying out a plan. What was their plan?
The idea is to stay very flexible and try and keep their approach paths open to this. And they're still planning to do an asteroid rendezvous mission with their new rocket and their Orion capsule sometime in the early 2020s is their hope. And the idea is that they grab an asteroid from deeper space, bring it back near the moon, go visit it, work up some technological expertise doing that, kind of getting back in the deeper space flight practice, and then start planning to head off to Mars in the mid-2030s. Now, against this backdrop, you have Elon Musk coming out a couple of weeks ago at this conference in Mexico and saying, that's all fine, but my dream since the beginning has been to colonize Mars, and regardless of what NASA does, I'm going to build this great big-ass rocket that he actually called it BFR for a while, but they have a new name for it.
Interplanetary. I like BFR.
Well, you know what it means, you know?
I do.
And, it paints a very clear picture, but this thing is taller than the Saturn V. It's bigger around the Saturn V, our old Apollo moon rocket, and it's got about four times the thrust, and it's this very kind of brute force direct approach to launch it, refuel it, send it off to Mars. Big piece of it lands on Mars, comes home when it's ready, and he wants to start sending these things on a regular basis in the mid-2020s. So it's an audacious, kind of crazy on the surface looking idea, but the engineers that have looked at it have said, you know, I don't see any showstoppers here. It's a matter of cash and engineering expertise and willpower. And man, has that guy got willpower.
Yes, he does. Now, you mentioned the space station before and how expensive it is for us to rent seats to get up there. The space station is important for a number of reasons on this whole Mars thing, because we've got to test out a lot of different technology up there. Because one of the things I was reading about is the life support systems. They reported that they life support systems that theoretically worked for years when they were down here on Earth, once they got them up in space, they were only working for about a week. So we've got, what can we do to increase our time on that space station where we can test out some of this stuff that we will eventually need to get people up to Mars and then safely back?
Well, part of it is how long you keep the station. There's been various dates planned, 2020, 2024, as to when it deorbits. And the older it gets, the more time that the astronauts up there have to spend keeping everything running and repairing things and doing EVAs outside to replace malfunctioning units and so forth. So the more time, but this is a balance, because you've also got to stop spending money on that so you can start spending money on your Mars rocket, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's this balance of where you put your time and resources. What they're hoping to do is keep it till at least 2024, maybe longer, although the Russians have said, hey, we're going to build another station and we're taking our modules from your space station and we're going to take them over to our other ones, so you figure something out. So probably 2024, 2025. It'll be decommissioned and deorbited in pieces. So while it's there, they want to do as much medical fact-finding as they can, and they are making good progress at finding ways to mitigate the effects of zero gravity on people's bodies. But it's a lot harder than we ever thought. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, it's like, hey, you put a guy in a can, you send him out into space, he does his things, he floats around for a while, everything's fine, he comes back and he's healthy. And we're finding that that's not necessarily the case.
Right.
You know, it affects their cardiovascular system, apparently. Their eyes get elongated and have more trouble focusing properly. Sometimes that's a permanent change. They lose bone density that you can get back. And the big bugaboo is radiation, the stuff that radiation does. I mean, we're basically sacks of meat and water. Mm-hmm. But we don't like being in space. We like being on Earth.
Yeah.
So you spend too much time out there with all these high-energy particles from the sun and from beyond the solar system banging through your body, and it can do a lot of damage right down at the DNA level. So that's something they're working on mitigating. They use exercise, they use a certain amount of shielding, at least they're experimenting with that. And they're actually finding that there are drugs that help control some of these factors. So it may be a combination of pharmaceuticals and technological innovation that makes this all work.
Well, now reports came out just the other day that are saying, yeah, there's so much radiation, as they estimate a trip to Mars, definitely enough to cause cancer. And now studies are showing that brain damage, you know, irreparable brain damage could be caused by all that radiation.
Yeah, and that's kind of a new one. And one of the guys, I was at a conference recently, an aerospace conference recently, where there was a gentleman who was an astronaut and an MD who was talking about this for quite a while. And he said, you know, there's things we're just, we've been going to space for 50 years.
Yeah.
There's things we're just finding that we just missed before. And the Russians have actually had people in orbit, single astronauts, cosmonauts in their case, longer than we have. But either the way they were sharing the data or the way the data came in or the way they were record keeping didn't give anybody good enough clues to really pick this up. So they're finding, and this is one of the things they're finding, that radiation is just much more damaging than we thought, even when you're inside a metal cylinder. And there's problems with that. When these certain particles hit the hull of the spacecraft, it actually is slowed down, but then three or four particles are spawned by the impact, and those go hurtling through the inside of the spaceship. So that's another problem. So this thing you're talking about, apparently it damages neurons in the brain, it causes inflammation over time, and this is all done, by the way, experimenting with mice. This is not something they really looked at in the astronauts. This is exposing mice to that environment over time, but it takes a long time to get Mars and back. You're looking at a year plus if they do it the way they've been talking about doing it. So if people are exposed the same way that these mice are, the fear is that they'll start having coordination problems, depression, forgetfulness, and all these other things, kind of like dementia almost, and that it can be a real problem on a mission. So they've got to figure out a way to deal with that. Drugs may be part of it, but it's also they're going to have to figure out a way to shield these guys.
Now, this may seem silly, but would it make sense to try to put people on the moon to live there, stay there for a while to kind of work out some of the technology and that kind of thing, and then shoot for Mars after that? Or is the atmosphere so different between the moon and Mars that it wouldn't make that much of a difference?
No, and you've walked right into the big fight.
That's what I like to do, Rod. I come in swinging. Let's go. Let's go to the moon.
And you did it wonderfully.
Thanks
for setting that up.
Sure.
We've been in orbit now for 30-plus years. You know, we haven't been back to the moon since the 70s. We haven't left the cocoon of Earth and the magnetosphere, which protects us from some of the radiation particles and so forth. So there's a lot of people, both in NASA and outside, academics, former astronauts, saying, look, let's just get the moon thing down again. Let's spend time working there, living there, understand more about this radiation problem. If we have issues, you're 2 or 3 days from home instead of 3 to 6 months from home.
Yeah.
And we can reach the people and they're going to be okay. So NASA still, you know, that's in that plan, but they're talking mainly about, okay, let's set up something in orbit around the moon. There's no need to spend all this time and effort to get down to the surface because we've kind of done that. Well, that's kind of true, but, you know, we were there as visitors.
Yeah, we just stopped over. We, you know, we touched down, not to diminish it, but we landed, we jumped out, planted a flag, unless you believe it was in a soundstage somewhere, which I do not. But that, but then we took off. We didn't hang around and, like, do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, these were expeditions. They were operating right at the cutting edge of the technology of the 1960s. So the idea is go back and really learn how to work there. And there's also a lot of thinking along the lines of there's resources there. Every time we fly a rocket, we got to haul all the fuel up from Earth into orbit and then to go beyond. And that takes a lot of energy and a lot of money. If you can find the stuff you need to make fuel on the moon, which we're pretty certain is there, there appears to be big chunks of ice on the poles. Well, from water ice, you can get hydrogen and oxygen. Right. That's fuel that the shuttle used. So that's a perfect thing to be able to move on from there. So that's another reason to go there.
Turn it into a gas station.
Well, exactly. And asteroids, you can do the same thing when they're passing by. And there's a bunch of companies in the U.S. looking at this to do it robotically. But the Europeans are talking about establishing a lunar village, a human-occupied lunar village there, to look at some of these factors and get more experience and contribute to this big overall program of moving humanity off the planet into other worlds. So these are all exciting developments. It just comes down to the old no bucks, no buck Rogers. Right. We got to decide if we're going to get serious or not.
Are other countries willing, and is NASA willing to cooperate with other countries? Because this does seem like a global thing, more than just a United States thing and a NASA thing. It does seem like it's going to take all the brains from all these countries to contribute to this to finally get this done.
Yeah, I think they're looking at that very seriously. And each group of spacefaring countries at this point brings their strengths. Obviously, the Soviet Union and now Russia have been doing this since we have, actually a little earlier. So they're very good at certain things. They're good at space stations. They're good at building rockets, reliable rocket engines and spacecraft. We have more expertise in the bleeding edge of high tech and navigation and so forth. The European Space Agency has been flying rockets for a number of decades, and they're getting very good at it, and they have their strengths. And then you've got this wild card with the Chinese. They've been actually working on their space program since the late 50s, early 60s, but it went very slowly. Now they're getting serious. They've had taikonauts, which is what they call their astronauts, in orbit a number of times. They just put up their second space station. It's small, but it works very well, and it's brand new tech. So they're learning how to do this. They intend to put humans on the moon by the mid-2020s. Mars is a little foggier. They said, maybe 2040, but let's get this down first.
Yeah.
So they're moving ahead very aggressively, but we've got a problem, which is NASA isn't allowed to work with the Chinese because of international trade restrictions. So that's got to be figured out before this can move ahead.
Well, that makes sense. We got to take a break, but I need to talk to you about NASA, why they are setting fires in space. And also, I hear you have dual citizenship now, which is very exciting.
Yes, just got it, and it wasn't hard.
All right, so we will talk about all of that. Rod Pyle is my guest. Go to pylebooks.com to read up on all the wonderful things that Rod has done. We will talk more about space on the other side. It's WGN. A few more minutes with Rod Pyle. We're talking about space on WGN. And as it always is, Rod, I look at the clock and I go, man, we got a lot to talk about in only a few more minutes. So let's start real quick. Why is NASA setting fire in space? What's going on?
Well, they want to know how it works, because fire behaves differently in a zero-gravity environment than it does on an environment like the surface of Earth, where we have gravity. So there's been this is the second major experiment. It's a program called SAFFIRE. And what they do is they have these cargo rockets that go up and deliver cargo to the space station with these robotic vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
SpaceX does it, and this other company has a vehicle called the Antares that they do it with. But when SpaceX does a supply run, they bring the capsule back, and it lands under parachutes, and it brings back experiments and other materials that they want to actually bring back. The other company, Orbital ATK, just sends the delivery capsule back to Earth in a reentry, and it burns up. It doesn't have a heat shield, and it's designed to do that.
Okay.
So their idea was, as long as these things are being tossed away anyhow, let's do some experiments in them that would be valuable. So you can imagine you're headed off to Mars. You've been in space for 2 months. You're really far away from Earth. You can't turn around and go back. You have to loop around Mars at least. So it's many months to get back. And a fire breaks out. You got smoke. You got damage. How are these flames going to propagate? How do you best put it out and so forth? So these experiments are designed to deliberately ignite a fire on a pallet of cloth and various materials. This new one they're doing will include plastics and other materials. And they're going to see how the flames burn, how they spread, what rate they spread, what directions they go. And as it turns out, it looks like they just kind of follow the airflow, and they spread pretty slowly, and they propagate almost in a sphere. So it's really fascinating. Instead of the heat convection that you get, like when you see a candle burning, going up away from the force of gravity, these things propagate in the sphere, and they move very slowly. So the good news is they're a little easier to control. The not-so-good news is there's still a lot more to learn, especially about how to extinguish these things quickly.
Ah, well, that's good experiments. And all right, let's get to the important thing, because soon we'll all be able to be citizens of space. You are now a citizen of Asgardia. And I hear that,
yes,
and I think
sir.
Of Thor, the Norse god of thunder. But I know you are not a Norse god of thunder, but you are still a citizen of Asgardia, the first nation state in space. As of just a few minutes ago, 27,333 people also citizens of Asgardia. What is this all about, Rod?
The idea is I'm taking a calling. I've only known about this for a few days because they set out this embargoed press release just recently. But the idea is it's a nation in a can. Basically, this nationality, and I hope I'm coining that phrase, this nationality will exist in the orbited object, so in this satellite.
Okay.
And the reason they're doing this is if you're a country on Earth, especially a small country, there's a lot of hoops to jump through to start flying stuff into orbit. You've got to deal with all kinds of legal regulations. Basically, if you launch a rocket and fly it, you're liable for what happens. So that's part of it. There's a thing called the Outer Space Treaty that was put together in the 60s. We signed it. Russia signed it. Now 102 other nations have signed it. And it regulates, you can't have weapons in space. You can't claim territory. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, we're not sure if Asgardia is going to sign on with that. They probably will eventually. But their idea is if they claim nationhood in orbit, they can pretty much do whatever they want, and they can invite smaller countries to come along and work with them and achieve things that they might not be able to do from Earth. So while citizenship, it's the easiest citizenship I've ever gotten, for sure, because it's basically name, email, address, and I am over 18. So that's not too bad. It's kind of like signing up for, Netflix or something. But it's an interesting idea, and why they're doing this, I think why they make it so simple is they claim if they can reach 100,000 people, which they've got a quarter of the way to just today, they can apply for state status and get recognition from the UN and that kind of thing.
Let me ask you this, because as I was reading about this, one, I am also a citizen of Asgardia, which is very exciting. We'll have to have some sort of get together. I didn't realize there was an outer space treaty. I read that and I thought, boy, that's something, sounds like something right out of Star Trek. There is a real outer space treaty. What's that all about?
The idea was, during the space race, we were doing that because we had this arch enemy in the Soviet Union. And at one point, people woke up and said, we could put weapons up there. I mean, we can just drop nuclear bombs from orbit. How sweet will that be? That'll take care of things quickly. So before that thinking got out of control, cooler minds prevailed and got together and said, let's put the brakes on this and have an agreement. So while you can have conventional weapons like a pistol or a mortar or bazooka in space, you can't have weapons of mass destruction. You can't develop them. You're not supposed to test them. There's been some things that could conceivably be violations, but they haven't been serious. And the important thing is you can't go to the moon and say, okay, I'm here. This is mine. Like Antarctica. It belongs to everybody. So you just have to agree with that.
Okay. And so that's Asgardia is going to be under that treaty, so we can't claim anything in our satellite country.
I mean, they have to become recognized as a nation before they could sign the treaty. But a dear friend of mine, Susan Holden Martin, brought up a very interesting point, which I hadn't thought of. She's a trained attorney, and she thinks like that. And she said, if you become a citizen of that country, do you share liability for something that goes wrong? And I thought, oh my, that's so great. So hey, you and I might meet in court. Who knows?
Well, listen, if somebody from Asgardia wants to sue me or another country wants to sue me because my nation is infringing on their space, their space in space, let them come at me.
Yeah.
Real quick, before I let you go, Rod, there's a lovely conspiracy theory that I'm always a fan of those. There is a speculation that the SpaceX explosion may have been sabotage.
Yeah, this was very interesting. SpaceX had put out a call to anybody that had video footage of that event to please let them see it so that they could try and track down what happened, because it's been a real mystery for them. One of the tapes showed a little flash and a shadowy movement on top of the building about a mile away from their launch pad, which their competitor, United Launch Alliance, owns. So they apparently sent a representative over to knock on the door and say, hey, I'd like to see your roof. And ULA said, go away. We're not going to do that.
Yep.
But they did eventually let somebody from the Air Force go up who looked around and said, nothing there. Now, I don't think SpaceX really took this seriously. And they're taking everything seriously, but they weren't worked up about it. They said, look, we just got to check everything. But when you think about it, you know, these guys are competitors. There's a lot of money at stake here. But there's other things. If you want to grow the conspiracy, you know, it was an Israeli satellite on an arch competitor's rocket. And I haven't heard anybody mention the Russians yet. Think of how much money they're going to lose if SpaceX is successful in taking away these $83 million seats. I'm not saying I think any of that's true. I'm just saying those are things you can add in the mix. However, just in the last couple of days, SpaceX did announce that they think they have the culprit, and it's a technological problem in the top of that second stage. So I think this thing has kind of gone away. But it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, that's not as sexy as a conspiracy that now may or may not include the Russians.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep that part. I'm going to keep that part going. Listen, Rod, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. Very informative and very interesting because you make even a guy like me understand the stuff that's happening. So we appreciate that. Everybody needs to go to pilebooks.com and pick up Mars Making Contact and Blueprint for a Battlestar Sirius: Scientific Explanations Behind Sci-Fi's Greatest Inventions. Always a pleasure. Keep that beard nice and colorful.
Sensational. You take care of yours, too. Take care.
Take care, Rod. That's Rod Pyle. It is always fun talking space with Rod. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time on WGN.
Blackhawks hockey is on
WGN.
It's Brian Noonan for Nick D on 720 WGN. Nick on vacation. A couple more days. He'll be back in Monday morning. No fear. So I get to spend some time with you today and tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to that. All right, we are going to talk TV. What are you watching in the new fall season? 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. We haven't talked TV in a while. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you weren't here, that TV is my one vice. And it really is. And now I've also gotten into it. And I know I'm very late to the party on this, but I started getting into Netflix like in the spring and over the summer. So I binged watched Daredevil and what was the other one? The other Marvel one, with Jessica Jones. And so now I got to get into Luke Cage, and then we go on Netflix to watch Longmire, which used to be on A&E, and so that's on Netflix. So I've got now, not only do I have all the stuff on my regular Dish stuff, now I've got streaming shows that I have to watch. So TV has become almost too much to handle. It is truly for me an addiction, because growing up I loved watching television. I've been on television a couple times, and I love it. But I'm finding, and maybe you are too, that with each new season I'm having trouble bringing new shows into the fold, because I've got all my returning shows that I'm recording that I want to watch, and then I try to make room in the schedule to bring some new ones in, you know, because you see the previews as they're coming and you read, you know, Entertainment Weekly or TV Guide or whatever trade publication you read, whatever blog you read on the, you listen to, who's the guy you guys have, a great TV guy?
Dan Feinberg
comes on Nick's show and he talks about TV. So it's hard to squeeze some new ones in, but we'll go through now. A bunch of new shows premiered, as they do every year. Some come out of the gate strong and then fade. Some take a little longer, and the networks usually don't give shows a whole lot of time to catch on, even if good ones. So just a couple of the biggest premiere this season was for CBS. CBS did pretty well. Their premiere for Bull, which is about a guy who I believe is a jury consultant, right? Is that what you
correct.
Call him?
Yes.
So he's a good-looking guy with glasses. He was on some other show, I guess.
NCIS,
which another show. All these, like CBS, I haven't seen any of these shows that have been on for decades. I haven't seen any of the NCISs. I never watched any of the CSIs. I just didn't have time for them. It's not that I thought they were bad. They didn't fit in. I didn't have time. So that premiered with 15.6 million. That had the biggest premiere of the fall. Followed by a show that is getting just trashed in the ratings, but people are watching it, Kevin Can Wait. It's so bad that John Oliver even name-checked it as a slam Sunday on his show. That premiered with 11 million people. And I like Kevin James. I never watched King of Queens in its first run. I watched it in syndication, like if I was on the road or something, and it was on. It was okay, you know, not a bad sitcom, basic, pretty basic sitcom. Kevin James, a likable guy, likable character.
Did I ever tell you about the times I attended Mass with Kevin James?
No.
Yes.
But you're going to know.
Yeah. So back in the day when Steve and Johnny ended at 5 and before we posted podcasts and before I was a father and married, occasionally I would walk over to the old Holy Name Cathedral at 6 a.m. for Mass if I couldn't go on the weekend. They have a 6 a.m. weekday Mass. So I stroll in one day. And I'm, you know, minding my own business. And there's a usual group about like 30 people, but everybody's kind of spaced out and among the pews and things like that. And minding my own business, listening. And then all of a sudden, I kind of just glance to the right. And there's Kevin James, two rows from the front.
Are you kidding me?
I kid you not.
In Holy Name Cathedral at 6 a.m. Mass.
So this was back when The Dilemma was filming in Chicago.
Dilemma.
It was him and Vince Vaughn and Ron. Not a very particularly good movie. But he was in town. And so
all his prayers for a good movie did not not pay
true.
Off. God was busy that day.
Yeah. So you know, there he is, and you know, like I started scanning the room, and like you could tell there was a couple people who recognized him, and a couple people who didn't. You know.
Yeah.
And then the sign of peace comes up, and you know everybody's far enough away that nobody shakes hands, but everybody kind of waves. So he waves at everybody. But my favorite part of the story is that. By the time everybody like walks over to the center aisle to get Holy Communion, the priest recognized him. And by the time the priest got to me, he still had a big smile on his face because he totally knew who he was.
It's a brush with greatness.
It was a brush with greatness. So, and then Mass ended, and he strolled off into the sunset.
He went
in peace. Yeah,
the sunrise.
Yeah.
Wow. With divine inspiration.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, again, did not work for the script.
Nope.
That's too bad. Well, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty neat, huh?
It's nice. Yeah, no, that is real nice. I don't know. I don't know what it tells me about him, but it tells me something about him, you know? That's pretty cool. So, well, listen, good luck to him on the new show, Kevin Can Wait. Premiered with 11 million viewers. Then it was MacGyver. And MacGyver's got to be one of the first shows canceled. I think it premiered with 10.9 million viewers, and I think that was cut in half by week two. Who thought this was a good idea? At some point, the people in Hollywood are lazy. Because you give the same people shows, and you're rehashing old shows that weren't really good back in the day. MacGyver was a punchline back in the day, you know? Then it became MacGruber. Now it's back with MacGyver. I have no idea who's even in it. Lucas Till is MacGyver. Some awful dialogue. So that, according to one reviewer who I've printed out. So that was added. What else in the top five for premieres? There was This Is Us. Oh, we'll get into that. That's one of the ones that have made the cut in the Noonan House. That's a new one. And my wife doesn't want to watch it with me. I think because she gets an ugly face when she cries. And I think there's a lot of tear-jerking going on in that show. And then Designated Survivor premiered in fifth place with 10 million viewers. That's another one that's made the cut. What is making the cut at your house? 312-981-7200. Your surprises of the fall season and shows that you gave a try and already you're like, no, we're going to get those off the queue right away. Jill's in Milwaukee. She wants to jump on. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Brian. Long time no talk.
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Yeah, on Amazon the other day, you know, you're going through your stuff, and they advertise this American Housewife.
Yeah.
You don't hear Housewife much anymore. And so it looked cute, and the actress is so familiar.
Yeah, like, Katie Mixon is her name. She's been on a lot of shows.
Right. She's very funny. And then they also have the guy who was on Drew Carey's show. The guy with the dark curly hair, very funny.
Diedrich Bader, I think his name is.
Right, right. And it's just really a nice comedy, funny, you know, topical. The kids are interesting. The one kid, the boy, he's like a callback. He's kind of like Alex P. Keaton.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very cute, entertaining. You know, like I said, you're very current with the humor.
Okay.
The other other than that, I haven't tried anything new. I've heard that Designated Survivor is very good, though.
It is very good. It is very good. I'll talk about that in a second. And that the one you're talking about, American Housewife, I've seen good reviews and bad reviews. And I haven't watched the show yet, so I can't pass judgment. I just know that some people are saying it's really good and it gets better as the season goes on, some of the critics, and other ones are saying, no, it's just, you know.
I liked it from the get-go, like the first scene. I think it may be more of a woman's show, more relatable to women.
All right.
But I thought it was very cute.
Well, listen, Jill, I like to be in touch with my feminine side, so maybe I'll give it a watch. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jill.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I don't know. I'm sure the executives are like, oh, no, we wanted to appeal to everybody. No, probably not. Now, I like that Katie Mixon. She, like I said, she was in Eastbound and Down. She was in the Christina Applegate show where they both played waitresses. She's been in a ton of stuff.
I want to say she was on Mike and Molly, too.
I never saw an episode of Mike and Molly.
Yeah, I've watched like 10-minute bits and pieces here when I was like tuning into other shows, but never watched a full episode.
It's amazing to me, for as much TV as I watch, and I don't know if I've made it clear, I watch way too much TV. But like that, Mike and Molly, Two Broke Girls, all these shows that have been on forever, and I've never seen them. I never watched an episode of Big Bang Theory in its first run. Again, I've seen it on like TBS and stuff if I'm in a hotel. But that show, I think, has been on since 67.
About that.
It's been on very, very long. Yeah, so American Housewife getting a lot of mixed reviews. But this Designated Survivor show, and I don't like it just because my glasses look like Kiefer Sutherland's glasses, or his glasses look like my glasses.
They do. Wow.
They do. I am the Designated Survivor here at GN. That's why they keep me in this room up here, in case everything goes bad.
Right.
I'm the guy. But it also means that I'm the guy they want around the least, because the Designated Survivor turns out to be the guy who was basically fired that day. Oh, my goodness. I don't want to draw that comparison. But anyway, so that's the it's a real thing, the Designated Survivor. And if you haven't seen the show, it's really good. And I'm a Kiefer Sutherland fan from 24, of course. I didn't watch his show on Fox. But my wife is troubled by this. Have you seen the show, Dan?
I have, yes.
Are you watching
it? It has also made the cut. I think we are two episodes in. We're a week behind, I believe.
My wife is very upset because she likes her Kiefer Sutherland in the Jack Bauer tough guy mentality.
That was the same comment by my wife.
Wow. And see, it didn't matter to me. I don't know if did it matter to you.
No, I was like, this is more in character with
yes.
what the character probably is.
Exactly. But maybe the ladies only want a badass Kiefer.
They do.
They don't want.
They married want the human. Nice guy and now are pining after the badass.
Right. And they want to watch Kiefer, you know, torture terrorists and blow things up and say, damn it, Chloe. They want that. And we watched a movie, like a straight-to-cable movie that Kiefer was in, a Western, where he was this gunfighter. It was actually pretty good if you like Westerns. Donald Sutherland was in it as well. But at one point in the movie, and I don't think this is spoiling it, he's one of those gunfighters who's hanging up his guns. And so, but guys are pushing him. You know, and what you know at some point, he's strapping the guns back on. But at one point, Kiefer takes a beat down. And my wife was livid. Livid! That I don't like to watch him in these sissy roles. That's actually how she said it. I don't want to watch him in these sissy roles. I said, you know he's acting, right? He's not really this cowboy. Well, I don't like it. I want to see him as Jack Bauer. So that's her only complaint about Designated Survivor. So I'm hoping at some point Kiefer throat punches somebody, or, you know, shouts out some, you know, hard directive at a general, you know. But I think as the conspiracy unfolds, we're going to see some more of that.
My wife was very happy when he confronted the ambassador to Iran.
Yes.
And he started showing off a little bit. And
right.
She's just like, there he is.
All right. Now we have a small sample size, two ladies who think the same way. Ladies, if you're out there, and I know the ladies are out there, but if you're out there and you watch this show, are you feeling the same way? Or is there another character that you identify so much in a previous part that you can't stand to see them as anything else? They're always going to be this character for you. Like for my wife, and it sounds like for Eileen as well, Kiefer is always going to be Jack Bauer. And God forbid he shows any sensitivity in any other role, things are going to get dicey. All right, we'll get to some more of the fall TV preview. I want to know what you're watching, what you're enjoying, and what you've already given up on. And we also will tell you the most watched show in each state. Yep, I've decided all 50. Going through all 50, Dan. Block out some time because I'm going to read it real slow here on WGN. Brian Noonan on WGN. We are talking fall TV and what you're liking, what you're not. And we've got the list of the most watched TV shows in every state. So we'll get to that momentarily as I try to figure out why I'm only hearing things again. But text coming in from the 312. Of the new shows, I'm enjoying the Fox program Pitch about the female pitcher that makes it all the way to the San Diego Padres. I'm also enjoying Designated Survivor, but I'm afraid it's going to start getting bogged down the way Quantico did for me last season. Now, Quantico is another one that I haven't seen except for like the final 3 minutes when I'm watching something else and then I turn on Channel 7 to watch the news on Sunday night. So it's like, oh, okay. Or whatever night Quantico, I think Quantico's on Sunday.
It is now, yes.
It is now. So that, I don't know. And Pitch, now, Pitch is one that I think Nick really likes because I think I saw him post something about that.
Right. He is. He enjoys the show, and he's a big fan of Mark Paul Gosselaar, best known as Zach from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, best known as Zach. I remember him well from NYPD Blue. That's where I go with a more adult Mark Paul Gosselaar. But that's just me, you know, because he was in the final seasons of NYPD Blue. So that is that. So I don't know. I haven't watched Pitch. Have you watched Pitch?
I have not seen it yet, but I that's one of those ones I think I'll come around to.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I've got one reviewer's things here. This reviewer did not like it. Said it's like Bull Durham. Everything that happens is incredibly predictable. I don't know.
It's a sports TV show.
Yeah, what do you expect?
Yeah,
it's like watching Rudy and going, I don't. I wasn't surprised at all by the end.
Why?
Really?
Why was he carried off the field? Well, it's a sports movie.
Yeah, duh, because that's what happens. Brian, maybe you're like me from the 773. I can't understand why, but I can't seem to get interested in 30-minute shows. There's a number of 30-minute comedies that we record, mostly ABC, I think. And then this Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And those we use, and this is horrible, but those we use as background at dinner. Because you can, like the Goldbergs. The Goldbergs is very funny. But I don't need to, you know, block out time. I can watch the Goldbergs while I'm eating and while my wife and I are talking, and we get a few laughs out of the Goldbergs or Modern Family, and that's enough. There's like New Girl, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think those are really funny comedies. We still, like I said, Modern Family. The new one, Speechless. Have you watched that?
We saw an episode.
With Minnie Driver?
Yes.
I kind of like that. There's enough good laughs in there to find dinner TV watching. That's what I like.
Our favorite is Fresh Off the Boat. Have you ever seen that?
Only a few minutes of it.
Yeah.
You know,
we were big fans of that.
See, and I came late to the Goldbergs, so I'll probably come very late to Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah.
They're all kind of in the same vein.
Yeah, that same vein of quirky family.
Yeah, because we graduated from the middle. Once Molly left for school, she was a big The Middle fan. That was another, you know, while something else is happening. But then when she left, The Middle kind of ran its course for us. And that's another. That's still on. I can't believe that show is still going. What's going on with that? I don't know. Linda wants to weigh in on Designated Survivor. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. Yeah, I could never stand Kiefer Sutherland. I saw him in movies a couple times when he was starting out.
Sure.
And he just didn't click. And I tried watching Jack Bauer because all my friends were saying, that's the best one.
It was the best show ever.
Could not get into it.
What?
But this new one, I like it.
You're sold on Designated Survivor.
Something. Yes. He's more mature. And last night was a very good episode.
Don't tell me I didn't see it. I don't want to hear anything about it.
Okay.
Don't spoil it.
But you and your wife will enjoy him.
Oh, okay. All right. So he strapped some on last night.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He did.
Well, that's good without being a spoiler. I think that's fine. So my wife will enjoy it. All right, good.
Yes. But it seems like all the NCIS I really enjoy. I record those. But what aggravates me is, like last night, the first hour or two, there's really nothing on. So what do? They put two or three shows on at the same time, and you have to record them.
Yeah. Well, that's,
you know, and they're both, you know, they're both good. And on the own TV station, Oprah, that station, she's got a couple of good storylines right now. One is Sugar, and it's very good. It's a family thing to where the father dies, leaves them a farm, and the kids didn't want it, but they're going to keep doing it because it's like a family thing. And she had on another one that's on, it went off and it'll come back probably in the spring again, is with another one. It's a large family. The father started out with a small church and a storefront, made it into a big thing, multi-million dollar.
Huh.
Very interesting.
And this is all on the O Network?
Yes, it's, okay. Oh God, if I could remember, it's like in the 270s, that number on DirecTV.
Right.
You mentioned Longmire.
Longmire, yeah.
Longmire, I love that program.
I do too.
And they took it off. I'm on fixed income. I cannot afford getting these other stations or whatever.
Yeah, the streaming services, Netflix and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that program. No, I cannot see it.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's that's tough because a lot of shows that people really like, they don't make it on the network, and then they've got to they've got to go to that. Linda, I got to get to news, but thank you very much for the call. Have a great morning. We'll continue some TV talk. If you have any thoughts about the new season, we'll get to this list of the most watched shows in every state and some other stuff. So we've got all sorts of texts coming in. Your calls are always welcome, 312-981-7200 here on WGN. Brian Noonan for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Nick will be back from vacation Monday morning. I've been having a wonderful time this week. Hope you are as well. 312-981-7200. That's how you get involved in the conversation. We're talking a little TV. The fall TV season is in full swing. I'm wondering what new shows that you're liking. We're looking at some reviews of what premiered with good numbers, what some of the critics are saying about the new shows. But really, you're the ones that make the shows a hit or a failure. So we want to know. Real quick, though, just a couple of things before we get to your calls and texts. CableTV.com did a little research, and they looked at the top 200 shows on IMDb and cross-checked that with Google Trends for the last year in order to see what TV shows were the most statistically relevant in each state. So, as you can imagine, Colorado, what do you think the top show watched in Colorado is, Dan? Colorado.
Something outdoorsy. How about like Survivor?
South Park, Colorado.
Well, that makes sense now.
See, now you've made me choke.
I know how much it means to you having that.
Oh,
so.
My goodness.
I mean, the longevity of that show is quite amazing, all things considered. I
South Park, 20 years.
Yeah.
I've lapsed for a number of years, and then somebody said, ooh, Cody, my producer on Sunday nights, you know Cody.
I
told me you got to watch the 20th season premiere. It was hilarious. So now I've been watching this season. Do my eyes deceive me as I'm looking at the Super Celebrity Hotline? Can this possibly be the man, the myth, the legend, Max Armstrong? Hi, Max.
Well, young man, how are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm calling the counselor and start your meter.
Yes.
And I'll go lie down on the couch.
This sounds very... Do we need some music, Max? Do we need...
Yes, it's working already because you made me laugh. You are my comedy counselor.
Oh, thank you.
And as I was listening to you, I'm struggling to think of a recent comedy that has really made me laugh. I've got a problem, doctor. I need you to help me. Did you leave? You know how demented I am. You know how crazy I am. Because
yeah.
I think like you. You make me laugh when I drive down the road.
Well, that's very
people.
That's very nice.
Very serious about that. I've told you about that. I'll find myself busting out laughing as I listen to you. but there's so much forced comedy. I think on talk radio. I think I find it on television. And forced comedy doesn't work for me. I can't laugh at that. It needs to be spontaneous. Help me, doctor. Give me a comedy that's on now that I think I'll enjoy.
Well, here's the problem. If you're watching a comedy on TV, it is scripted, so it's not spontaneous. But I will tell you some of the ones that make me laugh. I really enjoy Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I didn't think I would, on Fox with Andy Samberg. It also stars Chicagoan Andre Brower, who I went to high school with. That's very funny. I like the Goldbergs and Blackish on ABC. Those are, I think, are very funny. And New Girl. I always laugh at New Girl. Also on Fox.
I'm writing these down.
Yeah, it's so. I mean, it's hard because I don't like a lot of comedies either. But those ones keep my attention, and I, you know, I'm not laughing for the entire 30 minutes. But there's a good hand. There's enough laughs where I go, wow, this is worth sticking with.
I think I'm becoming a jaded old man, you know, but I still enjoy the enduring and endearing comedy of you know, the 60s stuff like Andy Griffith, you know.
Just, yeah.
You know, that's what I grew up with. But I really struggle with watching modern comedy because it just doesn't seem like comedy. It doesn't make me laugh.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that, you know, they try to push the envelope. That's why none of these shows are really... They're basic comedies. They're family comedies or workplace comedies. So they're, you know, they're all about relationships. And thankfully, the writing on them is pretty good. So, you know, that's what makes me laugh. And I want to, you know, I want to be caught off guard sometimes, too. And that's what makes me laugh. When I figure something's coming and then it goes the other way, that's what gets me.
Exactly. Yeah, I get that. I understand that. But, you know, as I was listening to you guys over the past few minutes, it occurred to me I'm watching television probably the least of any time in my life.
I mean, you're very busy.
I'm a radio guy, too.
Right.
I listen to radio a lot, whether I'm, you know, in the car here or in the shed down south of the Mason-Dixon line or whatever I'm doing. You know, if I'm working outside, I've got the radio on constantly. I'm a radio guy, so that's part of it. But I'm online a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
And television just is... And I know that's a fantasy to say because I'm up at this hour to get ready to do a farm television show that Orion and I own. You know, we've recorded every week.
Oh, sure.
But I just... I don't know. I can't watch the news because my blood pressure climbs. Yeah.
And you and me both.
Goodness, thank goodness for the Hawks and the Cubs and, you know, and college football because that's what... keeps bringing me back to television, I guess.
Yeah, well, there's so much out there, and so much of it is not worth your time. And when you've got a lot going on, you have to pick and choose where you're going to invest your time. And if nothing's grabbing your attention, why invest that time?
That's right.
You know?
Well, Counselor, you've helped me through this crisis. I'll check out at the desk. And, you guys accept the insurance bill.
Sure we do. And we'll validate your parking because you're a return customer. We always try to do that for our regulars.
Thank you, sir. Always great listening to you guys.
Max, it's great talking to you. I'm sure things are going very well.
Real good. Yeah, you know, I'm a grandpa.
Yes.
And, Linda and I are grandparents, and she keeps Miss Ellie, you know, at least 3 days of the week, sometimes four. And that kid is, you know.
Every
grandparent will tell you that it's going to be great when you become a grandparent, and you don't have any idea how great it's going to be.
Now, do you let her near your real dirty hats?
She does like my real dirty hats. She counts them, in fact. they're usually six or eight hanging in there as you go out of the kitchen into the mudroom, and she counts them.
Well, listen, anything that helps a kid learn and further their education is fine, whether it's counting dirty hats or whatever it is.
Well, I heard you talking about that yesterday, and you gave me some ideas, as a matter of fact. You reminded me about the importance of reading and other things. So, once again, Counselor, you've helped me.
Despite my best efforts, sometimes I do pass along good information, Max. It's frightening.
Great.
Frightening.
Take care.
Always
Take
good
care,
to talk to you, Max. Take care. Bye-bye. That's the great Max Armstrong. Unbelievable. Look at that, Dan. I think I went to put him on hold. I think I hung up on him. I apologize, Max.
Oh, that's all right.
Wow. I'm hanging up on a legend. That's nice. All right. Well, and again, now we've got some people weighing in. Let's take Jill first because she's been hanging on for a long time. And not that we're not as excited to talk to you as we were to Max, but I saw Max and I jumped to him right away.
I understand.
But welcome. We are happy to have you.
Well, I really haven't gotten into too much of the new premieres of the fall season, but I find myself watching more of MeTV and Antenna TV. And one show that I've come back to that was on when I was a kid is Barney Miller.
I loved Barney Miller. That was such a great, groundbreaking sitcom.
Well, and I was, you know, young when it came out, so I got like the basic comprehension of, you know, the basic humor of it, you know. But now, I mean, it's, when I look at it, it's like, man, that was really, it lasts the test of time, but it was, when you look at the show, it was pretty in depth.
Oh, yeah, because you had all the different ethnic groups, not playing to stereotypes, playing as real people. It was a great workplace sitcom, and it all happened in that one room. You know, sometimes they'd go into Barney's office, but mostly it was the squad room, and it was really, really good.
And the one thing I also noticed about, like, the shows, the older shows, too, it's funny how, like, I'll watch Chips or T.J. Hooker, things like that, all those fun cop shows. And, you know, they take so much longer. Like, they'll say, okay, I'm going to meet you at whatever place. And then you see the car traveling.
Yeah.
And then they cut to another scene, and they're still traveling. And then another scene's like, oh, my gosh.
The writing was not, they didn't focus as much on the script as they do now. There wasn't a lot of character development. It was, let's get these guys to somewhere where they can jump over something.
Right. So.
All right. So you're going with the old stuff, staying away from the new. All right. Well, listen, whatever you enjoy, that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be just something to enjoy and kill some time.
But as you said, there's a lot of shows pushing the envelope, and, you know, I've got a 9-year-old, so, you know, it's one of those things where there's some shows that are okay and then some that are not, and you know, sometimes, like, we'll watch Big Bang and The Middle, but those are our go-to shows, and I've got her into the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family.
Oh, man. She's gonna grow up thinking bell bottoms are still cool.
I know. It's a sad situation.
Now, there's worse things that can happen, Jill.
That's true.
Right, thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, let's do weather traffic. Then we'll get to some more of your thoughts on the new fall TV season. We got some texts. One back in Dan up, so I know he's happy about that. He can't wait till I read that one so we can gloat just a little bit. We're talking TV for a little bit on WGN. Always gets people wound up. The most watched television show in Illinois is New Girl on Fox. You ever watch New Girl, Dan?
I have seen a few episodes.
I think that show is hilarious. I really do. The guy who plays Nick is from Chicago. The character of Schmidt never ceases to crack me up. There's something about, what's her name, Zoe Deschanel, who sometimes a little too precious for me, but I like her. The whole cast seems very good. There's no weak links in the cast. So it's a nice little sitcom. It's a dinner sitcom. As my wife will say, I'm not really invested in it. So, you know, that's how we do it.
I would have never guessed that.
But the New Girl was the one in Illinois?
Well, it would be the one for Illinois. I would have expected like an hour-long procedural for some
reason. Yeah, I would, or one of the, you know, Chicago PDs or Chicago Fire, Chicago Justice or Chicago Nutbags, whatever. I don't know why. There's about 1.5 million shows. Indiana likes Supergirl. Indiana watches Supergirl the most. Iowa, 2.5 Men, because they're still back in 1993. Really? That Iowa? Come on. Get with the times, Iowa. Something new? Who else is our neighbor? Michigan watches Dexter, another show that's been off the air for a while. But good to see some of our neighbor. And our neighbor to the north, Wisconsin, the most watched show, a show that's been canceled, Castle. So we seem to be the only state that's current, which is nice. Well, Indiana, I guess, is fairly current. But once you wander off a little bit.
What about our friends to the west in Iowa?
I told you, Iowa's 2.5 Men.
Oh, I thought that was Ohio. I'm sorry.
No, that was Iowa. Iowa's 2.5 Men. Ohio, in case you were asking, is How I Met Your Mother. Mm. Another show that is not on anymore. Yeah.
The main character in How I Met Your Mother is from Ohio, so maybe that has to do with it.
Is that right?
Yep.
Which one?
Ted Mosby. Not the actual person.
Oh, the character. I see. Yeah. Okay. This is funny. South Carolina, they watch Vice Principals the most because that it was based in South Carolina. Did you watch that show?
I have not seen it, no.
Very funny. Again, Danny McBride was the main guy, and he's always the same guy in everything. This time he was a vice principal. But Walton Goggins, who was phenomenal on both The Shield and Justified, now is doing comedy. He has the biggest teeth in show business.
He does.
He makes the Osmonds look like they have a bad dental. They look British compared to Walton Goggins when it comes to dental hygiene. His teeth are like Matt Damon's in There's Something About Mary. They're just gigantic chiclet teeth. And he's a wonderful actor. I love him. He was in Sons of Anarchy as the cross-dresser. He's great. But plus, he weighs like 97 pounds. And his teeth weigh 43 of those pounds. So he's all teeth coming, gangly tooth man coming at you. But I can't stop watching him. He fascinates me. Just fascinates me. What fascinates Steve the limo driver, I wonder? Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How
morning.
Are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's you're talking about new shows. It's new to me because I never saw it when it was on originally. But the Sybil show, Sybil.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's wow. That was on a long time ago.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think it's from the '90s. I think. It's pretty funny. And plus, as an added bonus, you have Alicia Witt on there, who I'm always a big fan.
Yeah, she grew. She matured nicely. She was on Justified as a hillbilly criminal lawyer. She's very good.
I didn't see that. I saw her in The Sopranos is what when I discovered her. But it's a pretty good show. And Sybil's sidekick Marianne, that I forget the actress's name.
Christine Baranski, I believe it is.
Yeah. Very fun. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, that show was on for a while. Did very, very well. Well, I'm glad you're finally you're catching up on it, Steve.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to some radio royalty like you. So.
Are you breathing in fumes from the car? You might want to get your exhaust checked, Steve. I don't know what's going on in the limo.
Nice to talk to some. All right, have a good day.
Take care. Bye-bye. Radio royalty, Dan. What do you think about that?
Wow.
I think I deserve a little more respect. What do you think of that?
Where do you fall in the pantheon here? Are you a king, a duke, a...
I'm the jester, I think.
Do have the hat.
Yeah, I do have the hat, and that's how I'm perceived by most of the rest of the ruling class, let's say. Now, Linda chimes in on Facebook, and you can always do that as well. It's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook. She says, I knew American Housewife was a loser. Bad script, acting not so hot either. One time was enough, so she didn't like that. Let's talk about this This Is Us, Dan. You're watching that at the house?
Yes, we are.
All right. I am watching it too. But I struggle because I get involved with these emotional dramas, and then I'm unbalanced. Let's be honest. So my emotions are close to the surface, and I don't need to be weeping in the big chair as I'm watching TV. But I liked, and I won't give it away. But the twist, in case people want to jump in and go back and watch it on demand, I think it's worth it. I think it's a good character-driven drama. The twist at the end of episode one, I literally was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice that a show actually surprised me. I didn't see the end coming. I find the characters likable or interesting. You know who I don't like? The sister's boyfriend.
Mm.
Obnoxious fat guy. I don't like him. As a former fat guy who may still be obnoxious, I'm not buying it. Especially, did you see the one where they went to the party?
Yes.
Yeah. I was like, shut up. Sit down, goofball. Come in dressing like, Huggy Bear, and you're going to dance. No. I don't.
Did have a nice hat, though.
I may have to disagree with you on
that. Hat game is not strong for
him. I was not a fan of his hat game with that on some, and then the spectators, drawing a little too much attention to yourself. Mm. Having lived in L.A. when I was an obnoxious fat guy, that's not how obnoxious fat guys play in L.A. Everybody in L.A. kind of plays it down. This guy's a stereotype. They're making him the stereotype. So that's the character I find weak. But since it's not one of the main characters.
Right.
And really, we get it. You're horny. We got you. I get it. There must not have been a lot of beats for that character. The breakdown, his character development needs to evolve a little bit. The other characters seem to have a lot of layers to them. But I'm also upset with the brother. The actor brother, because at some point, and this is me, working in different areas of the business. Shut up, take your shirt on and cash the check. Or take your shirt off and cash the check. Am I right?
I don't know. I've never been a struggling artist like that. But
well, all right. Let's say here you were making a ton of dough like they do if you're on a network show. You're making a ton of dough and they say, well, Dan, part of the reason you got hired for this show is you look really good with your shirt off.
Well, thank you.
Well, I don't make you take your shirt off because it's late at night and it's just me, and that would be creepy. But if we were in the showcase.
I like how you didn't go at the HR angle that time. No,
that's just me going, you know. I would do it and not fear HR because all I would have to do is parade you in shirtless and go, see? And they'd go, oh, yeah, here, okay. Gotcha.
Quick question before we have to break.
Yeah, we
what did you think of, and this was the last episode I saw, but the twist for the ending of episode 2?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what it's going to, what does that mean? And my wife and I, this is really the only thing we discuss. We don't discuss politics or our daughter or anything. But it was, what does that mean? And I have a theory. It means one thing because of the necklace.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I think I am on your plane.
Yeah, it doesn't go the other way, because then why would the necklace still be there?
Right.
Right?
Right.
I didn't like the guy that's involved in that scene. Unless it's my theory holds true, then I go, okay, that makes sense. But if it's the other way, oh, no.
Hell to pay.
There's a reckoning coming. Speaking of which, who swears more at work, men, women? What do you think? We'll find out on the other side of the news, which comes up in just a couple minutes here on WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Having a lot of technical Oh, no, it's back. I know, this is behind the scenes. I don't mean to bother you with it, so I won't. I will tell you Nick will be back Monday morning. Hopefully Nick brings his own headphones because I'll tell you this. I love it here. The headphone game, weak. That's all I'm going to say about that, Forrest Gump. Do you swear at work? I love profanity. I'm not going to lie to you. When I'm not here, I swear like it has an antidote for something. Like if I stop swearing, I will drop over dead. But when I'm here in the studios, and you've worked with me for many years, Dan, I have never slipped. Saying that now, I will go on some sort of string like I have Tourette's. I will just start shouting out profanities like there's no tomorrow, having bragged that I have never done it. I've come close a couple times and had to double clutch, but I haven't slipped. But the workplace swearing has become more and more an everyday thing. It used to be, and I don't mean to date myself, but I remember, like, even when I worked in Marshall Fields or when I had, the only place where swearing back in the day, places that I worked, was when I was working construction or when I was bouncing. That was when guys would swear at work. Other than that, people didn't swear at work. Now, oh, everybody's swearing up a storm, swearing up a blue streak, so to speak. Except now, do you hear swearing in the office part of the building? Does management swear?
Can't say that.
Sales?
I have. That's not to say I haven't heard it here and there, but it's not like consistent.
I can picture the sales team just cursing up a storm, nonstop, sitting in a meeting, just trying to pitch people. With their profanity-laden pitches. That's probably not true. They're all wonderful professionals. I love them. Who do you think would swear more at work, men or women?
I would guess men.
You would be wrong. If you hear F-bombs getting dropped at the office, there's a good chance they're coming from your female coworkers. That's what happens when you give women the right to vote. Then they start swaying elections and swearing. And I said that in jest, ladies. So before you start inundating us with emails and texts, I'm kidding, of course. Thank God women can vote and do everything else. All right? That way I don't have to. It's just one more job I can push off on the ladies. Makes me even lazier. Yeah, listen, I hope that was fake today, that whole thing about repeal the 19th Amendment. I hope that was fake. Sadly, I don't think it was. But that's just a sidebar. Let's hope it's fake. So ladies are swearing a little more. That according to a new study by work management platform, I think it's Rike, WRIKE. They found that millennial women swear more on the job than any demographic. One more reason to taunt millennials. Because the millennial ladies are potty mouths. All right, call me old-fashioned. And you can.
Old-fashioned.
Thank you. And then order me an old-fashioned. Because now, since I'm going to talk like an old man, I want to drink old man drinks.
How much for the old-fashioned would you pay?
I'll pay $11 for an old-fashioned. If it's good.
Very good to know.
I would like to pay. There's a Chinese restaurant, speaking of that, where you can get cocktails for $5. It's on Ogden, or it's on Archer Avenue. So it's technically in Chicago. A friend of mine told me about it. The Chinese food is phenomenal, and it's an old school Chinese restaurant. You know, I'd say that and you can picture it. But their cocktails, I got an old fashioned there for $5. You know what I paid for a Mai Tai there? Bam, $6. And it was delicious. They're not trying to rake you over the coals. You know, I paid $72 for some shrimp egg foo young, but I only paid $5 for an old fashioned.
Wow.
That seems out of kilter on both ends. All right, so get me an old fashioned. What? Really? Like, you've got a bar back there. One, that I would order you around. And two, that you could actually whip me up a drink.
Our conversation about this $27 cocktail,
I know that.
It made such an impression on me that.
As I, Mary, who produces for Steve Grzanich and Steve Cochran, Mary Boyle, walked by me in the hallway, and she said she would pay more than that for a good drink.
Wow.
If you missed the conversation yesterday, we were talking about a bar in Los Angeles that is now charging $27 for a Mai Tai because of the rum that they use in it, some kind of crazy rum. So they claim it's like tasting history when you drink this drink. So Mary said for like a good scotch, she would pay more than $26 for a drink. I understand that good whiskey costs money. I can't. If I'm going to pay that much, I'll just go get the bottle, and enjoy it at home at my leisure. For one, if you get two drinks, you could buy the bottle, right? Because
right.
the rum we were talking about last night was $60 a bottle. So, okay, I don't need to deal with that.
I wonder if you did a taste test, if you could tell the difference between, whatever.
People say they can. There's people whose palates, they can tell a difference between a single malt and a blend or a different sort of, bourbons or this and that. I don't think my palate is that educated. Plus, I don't have a sense of smell. So I lose some of that to help me make those decisions. But still, I've done it with wine, I guess, to a certain extent where, I'll drink the $3 Chuck. And then we graduated up to like an $8 bottle of Ménage à Trois. You can get that.
I'm not a wine guy, but my wife enjoys it.
I'm not either, but that's why I drink like an $8 bottle is, plenty for me. I don't need to get, I've had glasses of wine from like a $20 bottle. Maybe I could tell slightly, but not really. Not enough to go, oh, I got to drink this. And if you ever came to my table and had like a $400 bottle of wine, I'd have a heart attack. And I know that just makes me sound, I don't know what it makes me sound like. Well, it makes me sound like pretty much everybody who's not buying $400
right.
bottles of wine. I think it makes me sound more like most people rather than, the couple wine snobs who are listening go, oh, what an uneducated boob. And I'm like, hey, get in line.
Our sommelier audience just dropped.
Listen, Alpina Singh was a big fan of mine until just now. And then she realized that I don't have the right glasses. That's another thing I don't understand. You got to have certain glasses for certain wine. And now they've got those same glasses for different whiskeys. Oh, if you're going to drink cognac, you drink this out of a snifter. And if you're going to drink bourbon, you drink it out of this. And you know what I drink it out of? A bag, right out of a bottle. Or, some promotional glassware that I got at a fast food restaurant sometime. hey, you want some bourbon? Sure, drink it out of Grimace. That's how I roll. I'm not fancy. The other night, so when we moved, we didn't unpack like all our crystal and stuff. So the other night we had a bottle of champagne that had been in the refrigerator for a while. And my wife said, well, let's open this bottle of champagne to celebrate Tony, getting cast in Tony and Tina and some other good things that were happening for us. I was like, okay. Well, then I realized we didn't have any champagne flutes. We have some, but they were in a box somewhere. I was like, oh, what are we going to drink the champagne out of? We had been to the Brew Fest in Berwyn, and they give you those little 3-ounce sample glasses that you drink beer out of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we drank our champagne out of.
Perfect.
Fancy, very fancy at the Noonan House. High line. Our champagne game, marginal at best. All right, now that we've had the old fashioned and we've veered way off, I'm going to start swearing again and get back to this. But can you tell the difference between, if you've had whiskeys or anything, could you tell the difference?
I'm not a hard liquor guy, so I couldn't tell you, but.
I could tell during the Pepsi challenge. If you go back that far, I was able to tell the difference between Pepsi and Coke.
When I was at that county fair, I was just like, that one's the Pepsi and that one's the Coke.
Yep. That's easy to tell. Yeah. They made it seem like it was a big, you know, national secret. Like it would, like if I sent you an email about Coke and Pepsi, it would, and you deleted it, it would turn into a big national thing. It wasn't that hard to figure out Coke and Pepsi. But oh my God, the shroud of secrecy that surrounded this test kept a nation spellbound for decades. How will I know? What will I tell you how you know. Taste it. If you've ever drank one or the other, you're going to be able to figure that out.
I am a Coke guy generally over a Pepsi guy. Yeah. And when the young man providing the test asked me, he's like, well, which one do you like more? I just said, that one's the Pepsi. I didn't want to like be rude for giving me a free drink. I was just like.
See, and I was a Pepsi guy when I drank pop. And sadly, I don't drink pop anymore. But I drank Pepsi like there was no tomorrow. I loved Pepsi. My brother Michael, he's a Coke guy through and through. But I think because we always had the Pepsi, the 8-pack of bottles in the house when I was. Well, my dad would get the 8-pack of Pepsi. And then, you know, the savages, the animals, we drank like the Jewel Pop.
President's Choice.
Not President's Choice. It was Yummy. Was it Yummy Brand? Something. There was a brand that you got at Jewel, and it was like the orange or the grape, and then you'd get just the cola, the generic cola.
Right.
And it was like, oh, cola. That's when you got a little older. Because when we were young, when you're young, you'd drink the orange or the grape. But then as you matured into like 8th grade, then you'd go into cola.
I'm surprised royalty like yourself didn't enjoy a Royal Crown Cola.
We would have Royal Crown Cola occasionally. I know there's still a lot of places in town that serve Royal Crown Cola.
Only pizza places.
Pizza places, a lot of taco places too with the Royal Crown. And I always, and this is, I hesitate to say it, but you know I say things and then I ask for, you know, it's better forgiveness than permission. I always see places that serve Royal Crown as like second tier, you know, even though they're not, but in my head,
right,
they are. Just because they're like, I'm like, oh, you're trying to save money on your pop. So you didn't go with Coke or Pepsi, you want a Royal Crown, huh? Hmm. Or I figure there's some sort of kickback scheme going on.
Sure.
The food's always wonderful. And I don't boycott those places. I still patronize. They still get my money. I just always, I'm a little,
There's a pause.
A little pause there. A little pause. And my wife will not drink a Diet Right. She only drinks Diet Pop. But she will not, like, you go into some places and they don't have what the pop is on the machine. You just go, oh, I'll have a Coke. And they're, oh, okay. And then they pour it and she'll take a sip and go, this is not Diet Coke. This is cola. Just your generic cola. No, Radio Royalty had four brothers, so we didn't drink name brand stuff. All right, let's do weather and traffic, and then we'll get back to swearing. And if you want to jump in on the cocktails and the pop, anything we've thrown out there, really, because you know me well enough to know it's not like I'm a slave to the rundown. If something pops up and you want to talk about it, let's do it. A lot of topics on the table. That's the thing. You throw it out there, Dan, and people just jump in. What are you going to do? You just start talking.
It's good radio.
It is. Well, I leave that to other people to judge, you know. What am I going to say? That would sound very egotistical of me to just throw that out, you know? Anyway, so we started talking about swearing at work, and somehow I ordered a drink, and then things went crazy. But millennial women are swearing more on the job. And I started to say about being old-fashioned. That's how it got to me. There's something about, and I notice even working with some of the younger people in Tony and Tina's and being around younger people that I'm still uncomfortable when women swear. Does that make me like a dinosaur? And I know it, I'm all about everything being equal. And it just throws me a little bit, especially when young women swear. Like if I hear my daughter swear or her friends swear, or it just sounds strange to me. And I know that seems very provincial, but I don't know what to tell you. They surveyed 1,542 U.S. workers, finding that 60% of women admitted to cursing at work compared to 55% of men. That might just mean that men are lying. That doesn't necessarily mean it's true. Although the men do swear at higher frequency than the ladies. GD right we do. Swear all the time. The study also found that 66% of millennials admitted to letting bad words fly on the job compared to 54% of baby boomers. While 67% of millennial women admitted to using profanity at work, it's not like the guys are talking like Ned Flanders. They're right behind with 66%. So the millennials, you know, just potty mouth. I don't understand it. Workers surveyed also said that 94% of the curses at work come in face-to-face conversations compared to email or online communication, which is smart because there's no paper trail. That's why I never, never swear in an email or something that at work, because you know it's going to come back to haunt you at some time, right? Because I see the profanity-laced diatribes that you email out, and I'm always shocked
right,
that you actually put those words to keyboard. That seems wrong.
Usually about colas, but... Right. Yes, I mean, that's just you can't swear online. I mean,
no.
I'm always worried because, like, I'm like, it'll get flagged as spam or something, and it won't go through.
Well, that's true too.
So, whenever.
Well, if you put it in the header, is the subject line "F you"? What? That's not going through.
But
it's going
the times
upstairs.
I felt compelled to do it in email, I always, you know, replace the I with like an asterisk or something. You know.
Yeah, there you go. That's probably somebody can get us a gallon of White Lightning for $60. That's a gallon as compared to just a bottle. That's what we need, moonshine in here. That'd make the show so much more coherent. If we're all geezed up on moonshine. Plus, we'd go blind. That's not.
Oh, yeah.
That's never going to be good. Drinking something that some guy made in his bathtub? No. I'm adventurous, but I don't know if I'm that adventurous. Here, drink this. What is it? I made it out back. What do you mean out back? Well, just out back. Ran it through some copper tube. Some corn in there, maybe. Potato. It's fantastic. Let's see. Face-to-face, the boss sets the tone. 66% of workers said they were more likely to curse if the person in charge is dropping F-bombs. Yeah, I used to work at a place where the boss swore a lot. Yeah, there was a lot of swearing going on. Baby boomers may have been cursing a blue streak at the office long before millennials were even born, but 45% of them said workplace profanity is, quote, too casual and feels unprofessional. So millennials are more tolerant of this. 45% say people cursing at work makes no difference to them because they aren't paying attention anyway because their work ethic is low. I'm teasing. Again, millennials. Millennials don't listen to terrestrial radio, so they're not listening. Are they?
They'll listen on the podcast.
They'll listen to it on the podcast. Oh, tell me about it. I know that. I know all about the podcast coming back to haunt you. I'm not going to. As far as the industries where cursing occurs most frequently, 64% of healthcare workers said they do it. That's nice. The people that you want taking care of, nursing you back to health with the bedside manner, your doctors, your nurses, your phlebotomists. Now, I can see phlebotomists cursing because they can't get a vein. They're just poking at you with a stick. I don't know why they'd use a stick. Maybe that's part of their problem.
Why not use a needle?
Well, that might be why they're cursing, because they don't have the right implements for their job. Percy wants to go back to the soda pop discussion. Hi, Percy.
Yeah. I hate it when you go to a restaurant. I'm a Coke fan.
Okay.
And you go to a restaurant and you ask them what kind of pop they have, and they tell you, well, we have Pepsi products. And they start listing off, you know, we got Pepsi, we got this, and, you know, cherry Pepsi. So you say, all right, give me a cherry Pepsi. Well, then they bring you back this Pepsi that they put, you know, cherry flavoring into.
Yeah.
It, you know, they can never get it to taste like cherry Pepsi. I don't mind cherry Pepsi, but it's, you know, when you put the flavoring in it, it's horrible.
You don't want homemade cherry Pepsi. You want the real chemically enhanced cherry Pepsi right from the bottling plant.
Yep.
I don't blame you. You're a man who knows what you want, Percy. There's nothing wrong with that.
You know, I don't know why. I can drink cherry Pepsi all day long, but when it comes to Pepsi, I can tell the difference.
And you don't like regular Pepsi? You're a Coke guy.
No. Huh? Yeah. I've had people, you know, at a restaurant say, you know, you want a cola or, you know, a Coke? And I say, yeah, give me a Coke. And they bring it, and it's Pepsi. And then when they come back, I say, take this back because this isn't Coke. And they go, well, it's a Pepsi product. Well, you didn't tell me that when I ordered it.
Right, exactly. You said Coke.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, Coke, well, fortunately for Coca-Cola, but, you know, Coke is just the term. I'll have a Coke, whether it's Royal Crown, P- Pepsi or whatever.
Right, right.
All right. Percy, thank you for the call. Good luck with the cherry Pepsi. That's another thing. I'm not one of the – I don't usually drink all the cherry or the vanilla, but I am a sucker for that machine, like at Five Guys, where you can mix a million kinds of Coke.
Oh, yeah, those are cool.
Oh, my God. I'm a simpleton. I truly am, because that gets me more excited than anything. No, you won't go blind. Oh, there's a guy who makes the white lightning. I won't go blind. Only make top shelf shine, very smooth, but it has a kick. All right, listen. Hop in the General Lee. Come on down, and we'll start sampling some moonshine. That'll be fantastic. Brian Noonan for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Nick will be back Monday morning. Blackhawks Express coming up later this half hour. That's right. The Blackhawks season opened last night. It didn't go as well as hoped for the Blackhawks, but you know what? It's the first game. If you're panicking now, you really, you know, come on. You got to get your priorities straight. Do you allow your underage children to drink with you at home? That's some people do, some people don't. The national drinking age was raised to 21 32 years ago. On July 17th. So I saw this the other day when there was an article in CNN.com, and it was talking about parents who allow their kids to drink and if that's a good idea. If it's, you know, because some people will say, and I kind of feel this way. My daughter is 20, so, you know, she's close to the legal age. And her friends who are some of her friends are already 21. A couple of them are still 20. And this summer when they were all home from college, they wanted to have a couple drinks at the house. And my wife did call the other parents and checked with them. And again, these are not 16-year-old kids. These are 20 and 21-year-old young women. And my wife asked if they could, you know, if it was okay if we served them a drink. And the parents were like, yeah, we, you know, the kids are at school, we're sure they drink, but I'm not going to be the one who starts serving kids drinks. But they're talking about mainly younger kids. A recent report in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs highlighted different studies about drinking with kids. In Sweden, 13-year-olds found that when a study of 13-year-olds in Sweden found that when children were offered alcohol by a parent, it was associated with a higher likelihood of heavy episodic drinking in girls, but not in boys. And in a study of fourth and sixth graders in the United States, found that when parents offered children a small amount of alcohol, the children were more likely to initiate alcohol use on their own. Did you drink when you were a child, Laura?
No.
When you were like eight?
No.
Your parents let you drink?
No.
Mine, this is scary because I come from a family that's peppered with drinking problems way back. You know, it's a long line. As my mom used to say, it's in your genes. But when I was a little kid at Christmas, and it was only at Christmas and, you know, maybe Easter, Thanksgiving, big holidays, when all the adults were having wine, my parents would give my brothers and I a little bit of wine in these little these glasses that look like little snifters. However, it was discovered years later that those little snifters held as much as a regular wine glass. So we were basically drinking from the time we were four, which may or may not, depending on if you believe these studies, have contributed to our love of, you know, alcohol later in life. I don't know. I was a kid. I liked it. I liked the taste of it.
Oh, you like the taste of
wine? I loved the taste of it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I couldn't even stand the smell of alcohol when I was a
kid. I couldn't get enough of it.
Oh, no.
I should have, yeah. Well, that's,
Your mom used to nurse you with, like,
oh, my mom used to, if we had intestinal problems, it would be blackberry brandy.
Really?
If my brother was teething, you know, put a little bourbon on your finger, rub it on their gum. Yeah, the whole, I guess, as I look back, the foundation for sustained alcohol success was laid very young. Another study compared seventh graders in the United States with Australia, where adult supervised drinking for teens is allowed. 36% of Australian teens had problems with binge drinking compared with only 21% of American teens. According to the director of the Division of Epidemiology and Prevention Research for the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, said, I think the evidence would suggest to me you are not playing your best hand if you provide alcohol to your kids. So I'm wondering if you've been doing this, what you think about this. Because, again, now I never did. Now we got some. Oh, when I was a kid back in the 70s, this is a text from the 815. My dad brought my dad an old style, and my reward was a sip. Oh, so you'd go get your dad a beer out of the refrigerator and let you have a sip. I don't know. And I grew up around alcohol, and it also says, some of this says, you know, you're not supposed to let your kids see you drunk.
Drinking, yeah.
Yeah. Drinking.
Drunk.
See, I always thought when my daughter was young, if she saw that, you know, I could have one or two beers and that was it, then that kind of sets a good example to show, all right, you know, yes, I saw my dad have a beer, but he had one. And that was, you know, you don't have to drink a million beers. You can have one beer when you're having pizza or something, and that's enough. You know, hopefully it seems to have worked with her. Plus, she's also heard horror stories of other people that,
family,
so it didn't always work. Another study in the Journal of Adolescent Health showcased found that children who drank with their parents were about half as likely to say they had alcohol in the past month and about one third as likely to admit to binge drinking in the previous 2 weeks.
So they don't tell?
No.
Or they don't do it? I don't understand.
What do you mean?
They don't tell their parents that they do it, or they don't do it?
Well, they drink with their parents.
Right.
And then they go out on their own and binge drink and stuff.
But they don't tell their parents. They don't.
Well, I don't know. That's not part of the. That's not.
Oh, I'm
part
sorry.
Of the study. If
wow.
they if they admit to their parents or not, they admitted to the people who were asking the question that
okay.
they drank.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those things where I remember my dad when we used to have these big parties every summer, Noonanfest. And it was my parents' friends and our friends. And then as my brothers and I got older, because I'm the oldest, so my friends were already 21. But some of my brother's friends were not. And there was always – and things have changed now because everybody's grown up and has kids. So the parties don't involve kegs anymore, which is a shame. Because I'm really the only – I think out of the five brothers, there's only, I think, two of us who still drink. For whatever reason, some just stopped. But anyway, but my dad was always panicky. But he didn't care. It wasn't a moral thing for him. It was like he didn't want anybody getting killed, which was nice. But two, he also didn't want to lose the house. And there would be the huge argument with my mom every year leading up to this party about, you know, people drinking. And you try to police it as best you can, but, you know, kids are sneaky. Especially, you know, when you got a keg there and people want to, you know. So it would always turn out no one left the party because everybody, it was like, okay, if they're drinking, they got to sleep here. So the next morning, there would just be bodies all over my parents' house, just in various, you know, in the living room, in the backyard, upstairs, downstairs.
What a fabulous memory.
Well, listen, it was the parties were great.
I'm sure.
The parties were tons
I'm not
of fun.
Kidding.
And
wow,
you know,
I actually had
friends fly in from various parts of the country
for
Noonanfest.
That's awesome.
There was always like there was karaoke, there were bounce houses, there was, it's craziness.
Wow.
Food, tents.
You guys know how to party.
Sure. It was almost like going to the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Did you put on clown makeup?
No, but the behavior was pretty much the same for doing that. Let's see what else. So some people say it's okay to, but I don't know. It's all up to you. Alcohol is a part of life, according to one of the people who were studying this. I would rather he begin to form a relationship with it under my supervision. This is one father, instead of a secret with his friends, where who knows what could happen. There's a part I do believe in that. I think if you're educating your kid, there's a difference between educating your kid and giving them the alcohol. Because once you give them the alcohol, you're pretty much
you're really
opening the door, going, "Hey,
you're
yeah,
really like, go ahead, do it.
Yeah,
do
you can
do
start
as
drinking
much as you want."
But yeah, I say that like I'm a free spirit. We never allowed any with my daughter and her friends. Nothing. There was never any alcohol, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the house that we were in. You could hear the basement through the vents in the kitchen.
Ours is locked up. My kids are teenagers.
And yeah.
Actually, my son is 21, and
okay.
He doesn't drink.
Yeah.
But I hope my goal is that they feel comfortable enough around me that if they do get wasted and they're sick or whatever, that they will be comfortable enough to call me and say, Mom, come and get me. Or maybe their friends would call and say, can you come and get your son?
Yeah, I would
passed out.
I would hope so, too.
I would that, you know, I don't, you know, don't want to see that happen, but I hope that they would. You know what I mean?
Well, when my daughter was in high school, they were so terrified because they all had to, they were all in band and all the kids were in different activities and you had to sign these things that if you were caught drinking, you were out of these things. And, you know, a couple kids got caught because they were at, even if they weren't drinking, they were at a party and people were, you know, posting pictures. So my daughter and her friends were always very good about that. And then she went away to college and, you know, I think the first year she was pretty much, she didn't drink or she would, you know, what, and now she occasionally she will have something I know. Cause she's, you know, it's New Orleans and she's in a sorority and they do, you know, but she has become the one who escorts people home. So she's the one who has to take care of her drunk friends.
She holds your hair while you throw.
Yeah, I guess.
She's that girl.
And now, even though she's in Europe where the drinking age is 18, she doesn't like beer, which means I don't really think she's mine. I am going to have a DNA test done. I'm going to call Maury because I may not be the father. And I'm joking about that, too, because, you know, Dad, now people are going to go, how can you say that about his child? But, you know. So she doesn't like beer. She doesn't like wine. She likes the real sugary kind of drinks. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, yeah, you have a couple of those and you'll be. So, but she doesn't really like to. From the 219 rather. I grew up with friends' parents letting us drink better than driving around. We had one house like that in high school where the parents didn't care if you brought over all kinds of beer, but they also didn't care how far you had to go when you were done.
Oh,
so. I was dumb, and I look back and I thank God sometimes that I'm still around, quite frankly. And I don't say that to brag or anything because I was stupid. But I was also 17, 18, and we're all stupid when we're 17 or 18.
You have bad judgment when you're that age.
Of course you do. And if parents and if adults are allowing that to happen and no oversight.
That's bad judgment too,
that was
right?
Horrible judgment. Horrible judgment. From the 331, where's the 331? It sounds far flung. Dan's looking it up. Drinking is useless. Why would you even consider contributing to the delinquency of kids? Why? Well, there are a lot of people who enjoy drinking and, you know, they want to share it with their
kids.
It's
a social thing. It's something that people do when they get together.
They do. And the thing is, it gets demonized because of people who make bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
But you can enjoy yourself and have, you know, you can drink responsibly. I know that sounds like a bumper sticker because it is, but you can do. From the 606, our moonshine friend is back, Dan. Good moonshine made by a person who knows to drain off the first 20 ounces or so. That is poison and smells like nail polish. The rest is good. Needs to be cut later.
All right. Wow.
We're getting a lot of information about moonshining. If I was a revenueer, I'd be tracking down this number, and we'd be seeing what was going on in his backyard.
331, by the way, Aurora, Naperville, Oswego, and other western suburbs of Chicago.
Is that right?
Wow.
Apparently I have never heard of that area code.
They ran out of numbers there.
I guess.
Yeah.
I thought there were still 708s or 815s.
630s, I mean.
331, you say, Dan.
331.
Is that right?
630s,
what
yes.
about the 606? Because I think I might need a road trip. Well, get me a pickup truck and head out to the 606, see what's shaking out there. You know what else is shaking? Time for the weather. The Blackhawks opened their season last night against St. Louis Blues. Things didn't go that well for the Blackhawks, but you can relive it right now because here is Blackhawks Express.
Sal Gennaro, and time expires, and the Blues beat the Blackhawks here 5-2 in the Blackhawks home opener.
There you go. The Blackhawks fall to the Blues, but that's all right. Next game here on WGN is Friday night at Nashville. Your pregame with Judd Surratt's at 6:30, and the puck drop with John and Troy is at 7. The Blackhawks in Nashville taking on the Predators and their horrible, ugly yellow uniforms. So that'll be fine. Maybe it's good to start off with a loss. Then they get angry and hungry. And again, if we're panicking after the first game, something's wrong with us. Would you agree, Dan? Sure you would. Why not?
Right. It's a game.
It's a game. There's not even any pattern at this point. because, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, one of the reporters was trying to set that up, asking Corey Crawford, well, at this point in the season, what do you attribute that to? Is there something that you could change? No. This point in the season is three hours old. Shut up. Go back to the press box and eat more popcorn and stuff.
Or hot dogs.
Or hot dogs, like John Fox would say. They do have a nice I've heard they have a nice setup in the press box at the Blackhawks game.
First-class organization.
From top to bottom. So why wouldn't they treat the media well and give them some nice food? They do. So, listen. But, again, this guy may have been, I don't know, maybe this reporter was all bogged down with hot dogs and whatever other chow was available tonight and wasn't thinking straight. Thought he was in mid-season eating form, and he thought the team was in mid-season playing form. When they were one game, they were in their first game playing form. He was already eating like it was the playoffs. Like, dude, we just started. Pace yourself. It's a long season. You better have elastic waist pants. You're gonna be acting like that. All right, real quick before we get out of here, we were talking about drinking with your kids and things like that. And Bob's a former limo driver. He wants to jump in on this. Hi, Bob.
How you doing today?
I'm well, thank you.
Back in the 70s, my father owned a limousine service in Cincinnati. I drove for him, and during prom season, I went to a house, picked the kids up, and their father put all kinds of beer, alcohol in the trunk of the car. And I told him he had to get it out of there because if I got pulled over with these kids, I was the one going to jail.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't see it that way. They actually had to sign an agreement that there would be no alcohol in the car for that reason. And, I mean, he just didn't care.
Yeah, I remember when my brothers were going to prom, if they a couple of them got limos, and they had to sign those same things saying, listen, we understand we're not going to have alcohol in the car, and if you do, the driver's going to bring you back or call the police or whatever. But yeah,
the driver's going to go to jail. They pulled you over, and this guy says, well, he was one of the high class attorneys in the area, and he said, if you got a problem, you call me. I said, no, I'm not making a call from the jail for you to come and get me out. It's not going to happen.
Yeah,
so.
No. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, not really.
But people do what they want, Bob.
Yeah, that's true. Another question. Am I supposed to address you as Your Highness or King Noonan or
No, I don't know where that came from. Like I said, I think our other limo driver friend was breathing some exhaust fumes. There's absolutely no title involved here. I'm just happy that you're listening and calling. So thanks.
Okay, yeah, I come through about three times a week from Kentucky up here to Wisconsin and always listen.
Well, we appreciate that, Bob. Drive safe.
Thank you.
Take care. Dan, the moonshine text is coming back in.
Never ends.
606. This is turning into a whole big thing. Have you ever had moonshine?
I have.
I have as well. I had this apple pie moonshine.
From one of our coworkers?
No.
I had apple pie moonshine courtesy.
Really?
I shall not name him because I don't know.
You can name him to me after we get off, because I got to hit him up for some of this. So it's a he. That narrows it down to just about everybody. Was it Nick? Nick's not brewing moonshine at the house, is
no,
he?
No.
All right. I don't know who's doing it. All right. We got to do this. Are we taking a break? Then we're going to talk to Steve? Maybe? We don't know. We'll see. Steve comes up after the news. That's all we know on WGN. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. I will be back tomorrow morning at 2. We're going to talk baseball and sports memorabilia. We'll have an overnight arcade and all Nick's regular features. That's tomorrow. Thank you, Dan. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Vic. Have a lovely, lovely day.